The Football Show
on Off the Ball
with Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, EFL, Scottish Premiership, and much more live on Sky Sports.
I'm prepared to anything I can. Well, do it then.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now you're welcome along to the Football Show. Very happy to say we're going to be talking Liverpool a little bit later on. But first up, Pat Nevin is with us. Hello.
Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Very well. Think we have a title race again, which really did not seem likely, I have to say. When we spoke over Christmas and through much of January, it really did feel like it was desperately unlikely. And now suddenly here we are. Liverpool can go within three of City with a win against Leeds on Wednesday. I mean, you still feel it's a big ask for Liverpool, but at least we got something.
I'd have said it was a very, very big ask before the adaptations to the team. You know, the fact that they've added well, they now actually look as if they've got a depth of squad. I was over in Milan for the Liverpool game against Inter there, and the changes he was able to make in the start of the second half, they were under a wee bit of pressure from Inter, you know, just to start the second half, because Liverpool had completely dominated it in the San Siro in the first. And then he had to make some changes. And he didn't have those options before. And then suddenly they just strangled the game, took control of it, got the two goals. And it just told me so much that they've now actually got depth, much, much more than you thought. We've been talking about it for a while, but it's there now. And that's without, you know, Jota going off injured was a bit of a blow to them. But, you know, looking at it now, they can make changes in the most important parts of the field and make themselves better. So, yeah, they can do that. I didn't think they could do that before, anywhere near the level Man City can. So, yeah, we've got a title race on, 100%, because had they, you know, kept on with that squad and stayed in the Champions League and tried to keep up with City in the league, I mean, something would give. Absolutely something would give. But they've got that depth now, and do you know what? It's not beyond, well, definitely not beyond the bounds of possibility. And those, the run of wins now is fantastic. So, yeah. We're in there. It's exciting.
Let's talk Man City 2, Spurs 3, because it was an amazing game. Not least the finish was pretty exciting. When you think about that Spurs first goal where they work it up the left-hand side and Kane drops deep and Son takes off, and it all feels very choreographed. And Conte, we know just through watching him and through listening to various of his numerous players of his interviewed, he's very detailed with this kind of stuff. That struck you as a team beginning to internalise Conte patterns and feeling good about Conte patterns. And even from Conte's point of view, for all the cribbing, he's got some good players there. He's got a few people who can execute a few of these patterns.
Yeah, and on top of the fact he had to get Kane and Son more than anyone else working together again, and really well, and it looked like that. Also, there was that phrase that football people always use, but they had more intensity about them this time than they've had for a while. And that's Conte. That's how he does it. That's what he demands, and he will only have players who can't do it. And considering, if you look at the players who left, I mean, Dele Alli, he's just not a player who plays with that intensity. It's just never really been his style, but it certainly hasn't been his style for a while. Even Hill, who left, who's a lovely player, really a lovely player, and two or three years down the line, he'll be a really good player for somebody. But he's not going to play with that intensity for 90 minutes, so he doesn't want him. And you look at it now, I say isn't going to use them as much as the others, but you look at the guys that he's kind of, he's getting the best out of, and it's like that with Conte. You know, he will get them working, or else, you know, you will go out the door. And they're all the same. I mean, Pep's the same, and we know Klopp's the same, and we know that's, you know, it's just the very top ones, A, demand it, B, are allowed to demand it, and that's a big thing. Because you might have a top player on, but if you've not got the power as the coach and you're a wee bit sort of lower down the pecking order in the league, you almost have to put up with the ones that are kind of swanning about a wee bit. But he won't. And the thing is, he never will. He doesn't put up with that at all. He just, the glary eyes don't allow that when you're getting the other side of them. So, yeah, it looked like a Conte team and a Conte performance. But, you know, he won't stop moaning, like... That'll carry on. That'll continue to carry on, because there's a lot of managers like that. I've worked under a few myself, and they'll tell you privately they're not actually too dissatisfied with certain things. But don't ever let the board know that. That's the last thing you want to know, because you have to make sure that they always feel under pressure to give you everything you possibly can. So that's Conte's style. And it was great to see it because, you know, it was a brilliant game. They were so open. They, unlike most teams, they just stood and stood punch for City. And how many teams don't do that or aren't capable of doing that? And it was great to see. Brilliant to see.
Mm. Harry Kane at the centre of it.
Yeah, and I get how long has it taken Harry? I mean, he scored a few goals this season, but how long has it taken Harry to look like Harry Kane this season? And of course, the effect of what happened last summer was always going to be... I didn't think it would last as long as it has. You know, and he really has been... For periods, it was a shadow of the player. And then for other periods, he just wasn't quite the same sparkling self. But we're beginning to see bits of who Harry is. That, when that finish, you know, the outside of the kind of inside of the boot pinged into the top corner as it came across. I mean, honestly, you think about it, 99% of players come in and just try to get something on it. That's what you do. You try and redirect it, get a bit of your body on it. Not Kane, when he's in that sort of form, he actually goes in with pace, takes it in a kind of bounce volley and directs it top corner. It, honestly, it's one of those goals where you really need to sit and think about it and go, how many players would do that to that level? And very, very few. And it tells you that his confidence and his ability and his feelings are back to where they should be. I don't know if Conte can keep them there. We'll find out at the end of the season. But if he can get his team, I mean, they've had a few games in hand, they're still not beyond the possibility of getting up there to the top four. I don't think they will. But if they play like that all the time, they've got half a chance.
Mm. And Conte, for all his complaining, has come out subsequent to an interview in the Italian press making its way over here to say, well, I'm no longer doing... Well, I'm no longer allowed to do interviews in the Italian press, is almost how it's been portrayed. But you know, I got the impression he was happy enough not to kick up a stink in the media generally, certainly as much. So that kind of should be acknowledged as well, I suppose, when it comes to his attitude towards things. What about his two signings then, who started the game and played? How did they do? How did they look to you?
Kulus, can I get this right? Kulusevski, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got that right.
Yeah.
I didn't know enough about beforehand, but he started the way you want him to start, you know, and it's exactly what you want to see. But yeah, I'm not going to gauge him in that one. Bentancur is no surprise, absolutely none. When you've watched him in Italy, you've watched him in the Champions League, it's fine. He's this level and he'll be okay. And of course, Conte knows him incredibly well. And it just suddenly makes that look a lot better, doesn't it, in that midfield. Fairly surprised, I have to say, the Sessegnon was quite surprising because he was out of it for quite some time. But it's intriguing to see what he's done with it. But you kind of want to get carried away, but you better not, because that's what happens with Spurs sometimes. They go through this wee period and you think, wow, what a team. I can remember at the start of the season, I watched them down in a friendly in London and I thought, wow, they look brilliant. I don't think, and Kane wasn't playing. And then they stunk the place out quite soon afterwards. So, nice, well done, decent game, got himself back in a position. Bentancur's a good start, but I still think the way he's talking about centre-back, he needs another one, and I agree with him. He absolutely needs better at the back.
Mm. And what about City then? What did you make of their performance?
I think they created enough. I mean, the goals they scored those two goals, and that's fine, and they were... definitely. I mean, there was a brilliant save, the fantastic save by Lloris at one point. But then again, he didn't cover himself in glory, did he? He's actually thrown a few in recently, hasn't he? For somebody who was pretty dependable, but he's thrown a few in. I don't think they panic too much about it. If you're Manchester City, okay, you've lost some points. In a normal world, you probably get a point out of that. But I don't think they should panic about it. There's enough quality there. You know, Sterling, I still think, looked really back to his absolute sharpness again. Maybe he didn't have as good a game as he had recently, but you can see the sharpness there and the brilliance is there. If I was them, I wouldn't even be mildly concerned. If they got one or two more injuries, if they got De Bruyne injured, the usual stuff, then I'd be concerned. But it's easy to go and have a little bit of a knee-jerk after, you know, that. But
yeah.
I don't think you should do that. The Premier League's hard. There are hard games. And you caught Spurs on a right good day.
Elland Road Leeds United, Manchester United, pouring rain, pitch getting gradually worse as it goes on, an amazing element of chaos to the whole thing. And when Leeds scored those two goals, the atmosphere was absolutely extraordinary. Manchester United tend to do pretty well against Leeds, you know, even the troubles of the last couple of years notwithstanding.
Yes, but can we say, what century was that game?
No.
That looked like the wrong century, didn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely looked like the wrong century. When was last you see the kind of, it almost looked like it should be muddy. It really should have been muddy. The way the game was being played, the way the tackles were flying in, and yeah, a few of them were a bit iffy. And some of them weren't, it has to be said. You know, there were a couple of them in particular that the referee let go, where 90% of the other referees pulled them up. And then you look at them and you think, actually, you got that spot on. I think it's sort of the earlier, really early game when the referee spotted Wan-Bissaka going down for something and there was nothing wrong with him. And it happened a couple, Bruno went down as well. And you just think, yes, serves you right. Absolutely serves you right.
Mm.
I mean, to lose a goal out of that one where Bruno Fernandes went down, I thought was brilliant. I'd stand and applaud that for the referee. And I think he'd go home at night very, very happy. But it was a phenomenally entertaining game. And yeah, the rain helped. The fact that it's Leeds United and it's a Bielsa Leeds United absolutely helped as well. But it does tell you something about United. There was a bit of battle back there, wasn't there?
I was just going to say, there was more work rate there, and they were up for it a bit more than you feel they are certain nights when tracking back is very optional.
And you kind of, I just can't tell you why. I don't know anyone can. Is it the fact that it's Leeds? You know, is it the fact that, you know, that place was absolutely buzzing from start to finish? You get a goal at the start. Yeah, McTominay and one or two others are running about throwing a few tackles in. It can be all those things, but surely you should be able to do that every week. Everyone knows you should be able to do that every week. It's probably all of the above. And then the fact that it was damn freezing as well, so you better start running about or else you get cold. I do think there's a bit of that it takes two to tango in that one. And Leeds were up for it as well for large periods of the game, so it made it a brilliant game. Having said that, I still don't think that's the style that wins you leagues. In fact, it's not the style that wins you leagues. These days, you need more control than Manchester United have for large periods of the game. But it's, you know what it's like with United? Every time you go through the period, we think, well, I've given up completely in Paul Pogba. And then he does two things that are absolutely and utterly brilliant, you know, that creates opportunities and chances, and you hold your hand up. But it's not about one or two games. It's about what you do of the entirety of the season. But I mean, you liked what they've done. There's a battle on now. And I think that's what they all know now, isn't it? Everybody knows that this battle for, I'm not going to say fourth, I'm going to say third and fourth. Because I think there's a big difference between saying fourth, because that's giving Chelsea everything. I don't think you give Chelsea a carte blanche through at this point in time. Because others are getting into the battle now. Arsenal are playing a bit better as well, you know, and United they're in fourth place now. They're only, was it 4 points behind Chelsea? There is certainly lots and lots of fighting and battling to go there. I'm trying to think who I went for at the start of the season. I think it was United would be the other top four team. At the moment, you wouldn't argue too much against it. It's a toss up with them and Arsenal and West Ham and on the outside of it, Spurs.
The only thing is, they are on the easiest fixture list run of all time, the way it's fallen. Like, so they've had Norwich 11th of December. They were abysmal away to Newcastle over the Christmas week, you'll remember. They beat Burnley. Then they lost to Wolves. They had Villa in the cup to beat them. They drew 2-2 with Villa. Then they played Brentford, beat West Ham. They lost to Middlesbrough in the cup. They drew 1-1 with Burnley, drew 1-1 with Southampton. They did beat Brighton, and now they've beaten Leeds. That's all fine, but I mean, you do not get an easier run than that across 6-7 weeks, because we're now about to head into Atletico Madrid, then Watford admittedly on Saturday, but then it's Man City away, and then it's Spurs, and then it's Atletico back to Old Trafford, and then it's Anfield away, and then it's Leicester, who you'd presume will have some players back, and then it's Everton away, and that could be tricky, and then it's Arsenal on the horizon away. So the real litmus test is coming. I don't know if you've seen enough. I mean, maybe the battling atmosphere of Leeds, but just with the atmosphere and the rain, I feel like that game almost took on its own quality and they just got sucked into it almost. I don't think we've seen enough to feel in any way confident that they're about to have a good 6 weeks.
There is no way in the world to say they were confident about it, but I wouldn't put it past them. So you can get yourself up for that one. In normal times, and I mean normal pre-Pep times, you'd say, well, the Manchester Derby, I mean, you get yourself up for that, great. But honestly, really, you know, City playing at their very best can destroy them again.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think it will be March. I think you'll know by the end of March with them, because they have to have a great March. They have to do, obviously, the games, you know, Atletico, the second leg there, but Liverpool away and Manchester City away, that's tough. So you wonder if they're going to get any more than 3 points out of those nine that are available. And they do well to get 3 points, because the other ones, as you say, Spurs. So you'll know all about it by the end of that. And I do suspect others will go in little runs before, you know, over that period of time. So
yeah,
they've given themselves a platform. They've given themselves a tiny little bit of a cushion from what's below. But they need to go and do, this is when they find out if they're good enough. And they don't deserve it if they don't get results out of those games. You don't deserve it, because you shouldn't get fourth by, you know, just beating all the little teams, as you suggest, although little's not the right word, but, you know, all the others, the also-rans to some degree. If you're going to be a top four and to be a, inverted commas, Champions League team, you should be the top ones now and again. So, yeah, this is the time. I'm kind of looking forward to their games, because, as I say, if Pogba fancies doing that 2 or 3 weeks in a row, but we've got a bit of a problem just now, because there's quite a few players that do that to you just now. Not talked about Lukaku yet.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Exactly. You want somebody to do it 2 or 3 times in a row. There's lots of players. There's Mo Salah will do it 2, 3, 4, 10, 20 times in a row. It's not as if it's impossible to do it.
Mm.
And there's lots of them out there that are doing it. So that's what United need more than anything else. And that's just what they've not been able to do. I mean, having said that, McTominay's keeps on doing what he does, but that's not always the creative stuff.
Yeah,
which is,
but he is one of the few where you get a certain level of effort guaranteed, McTominay, and it stands out.
I'm not being Scottish biased here.
No, you're not. You're right. No, he stands out a mile. He stands out a mile as someone who's in the game and always in the game, and not just making his way through it as it suits him. Before we pass on Ellen Road, one of the other fallouts, the PFA have come out very strongly about the concussion protocol and the league being either ignored or not being strong enough. I think it's actually both. The current rules are being ignored and the protocol aren't strong enough. So Robin Koch, 25 years of age, had the clash with McTominay on 11 minutes and then he was treated. And 15 minutes after the treatment, he sat down and had to be taken off and didn't look to be in great shape. There was talk of lack of vision and balance. He had a cut above his eye as well. So the FA guidelines state that any player who sustains a suspected concussion should immediately be removed from the pitch. If in doubt, sit them out. So for me, that is an open and shut case of a suspected concussion. It doesn't take much to suspect concussion. Clash of heads is a suspected concussion. So they're ignoring the protocol that are already there. And then there has been talk from various quarters that there is a need for temporary substitutions. The PFA called for that back in April of 2021, for instance, akin to rugby, where you can do a head injury assessment. Now, to be fair to Leeds, they have confirmed Robin Koch passed all of the on-field concussion screening tests that are currently part of the Premier League protocol. The player was told if he developed any symptoms, he should sit down in the field of play and would be substituted immediately, which is what Robin did in the 29th minute of the game. The medical staff at Leeds United have always been in favour of temporary substitutions for head injuries, as it would allow the staff more time to assess an injury and allow a period for symptoms to potentially develop. So that last paragraph is quite interesting. Leeds are coming out and they're saying in a pointed way, in so much as the rules are allowing us to, we did a good job. But it's pretty obvious they don't think the rules are good. They think there should be HIAs or temporary substitutions for sure. I mean, I would criticise them to a point though, the if in doubt, sit them out line. In that instance, you would have to be in doubt. There was a clash of heads. So be safe and not sorry would be the very obvious advice there, and get him off. You can understand if he's saying, I feel okay, it's just a cut. They're arguing they did the on-field tests as they're currently allowed. But either way, it's all very unsatisfactory and football is embarrassingly behind on this situation.
It is. And it's not if, it's when you start doing the substitutions, giving you a chance to take it. But it's not if. And it drives me nuts when football drags its heels in these things now and again. When I'm sitting there over the years saying that will happen, it's just a matter of time, and I get bored asking for it. Yes, I know we did say that about VR. Look, it's going to happen. You may as well do it now. Find out, figure it out. and it will happen. And it's, I just hope nothing dreadful, you know. Dreadful things have happened, and no doubt from concussions, you know, in longer term, we know that. However, something dreadful might happen on the actual field of play because that's not been taken care of. So that it's got to change, 100%. The one wee thing that I would change, I would add to it just now, apart from substitutions, yes. If in doubt, I hate that line. I absolutely hate that line, right? You see that, you tell me when there's not doubt, because I don't know. If somebody taps your head a wee bit like that, there's a tiny wee bit of doubt. You just don't know. Unless you can go and have a look at a monitor and check it. See the medical staff. They should be all over that. Absolutely all over that. They're gone, they have to check them at a time, but they should be taking them off and checking with the video cameras what sort of knock it is. They won't have seen that necessarily at the pace it happened. That we all saw it from a number of angles in the end. And for the angles that we've seen, you're absolutely right, so don't open the shut case, 100%. Get them off. That's too much of a chance to take, because that was the biggest problem with those type of head knocks is because you don't see it. If you don't see it, you cannot take any of the hit off it. You take it straight in, or you sometimes even go into the head knock. I've been there, I've been on the end of it, I've been in hospital and I've had surgery, the whole lot from it, right? The worst ones are the ones you don't see, right? It's like behind a bus and you're never ready for it. It's horrifying. Had the medic seen that and pored over the video, they'd have got them off. Absolutely, they would have got them off. So they've got to start making sure that there's an availability there for people to see that, because this is more important than VAR. You know, if the VAR's there, get the VAR that sort of monitor. Let them have a look at it. That's more important.
In rugby, there's a match doctor, in effect, who's watching all the footage, and if he or she sees something, they call it HIA is done.
And exactly. And that will happen in football. It's just so slow to happen.
Yeah.
And it's kind of horrible, because it's one of the things, I always think when I'm doing co-coms or whatever, and say you've got a tiny wee monitor and you're commentating in the game and the game's in front of you, right? And then you check your wee monitor. This is what it's like, guys and girls. You look down and you look up and you look down, and then you go on with the game, right? While you're watching the game going on, everybody at home then gets another couple of angles, the close-up, and quite often they have more than you do. It's a horrible, horrible feeling where you're seeing something and everyone's going, what is he talking about? So you have to make sure that you're all over every single piece of footage that everyone else is over. I see it all the time now when I'm watching, you know, and it happens sometimes when even in Sky or with BT or whatever, the co-com will be doing this, or the commentator will be missing it, where we're all going, why the hell don't you know this? It's because they're not watching the same thing as you're doing. That's the medic's problem too. We're actually seeing more than you're seeing, and that should not be the case. They should be able to see it. So that's one little part of the protocol I would add to it. But as you say, rugby's there already.
Yeah.
It got it wrong, but from within the rules as they are just now, it probably wasn't wrong. But the rules are a mess. They really need to be able to get that closer. I'm a wee bit surprised.
I feel they did get it wrong within the rules this time. We can labour the point, and I don't know what they saw, if they saw a video or not of what happened.
If they'd seen the video, they got it wrong, 100%.
But even if they didn't, clash heads and blood pumping from them, for me, that's a suspected concussion.
Exactly, and every single one will be. So that's the if and doubt, Matt. The if and doubt, it's not legal enough for me. I need something stronger than that. I need to watch it again, check. Because if somebody walks by and taps you in the head, well, that's a possible concussion. It might just be a wee bump. But I suppose you don't know until you see it, until you know all about it. You're saying there's not much doubt there, and I agree with you, but only if you've seen it.
Fair enough. Well, we don't know if they saw it, to be fair, but there's something gone awry there. And just by the way, one other point, there's not much we can say about this because there's no obvious solution, because it only takes one person to throw a coin. But Anthony Elanga was hit by one in the goal celebrations. And again, I mean, you're talking worst case scenarios here, but eventually a coin's going to hit an eye and you're going to have a dreadful career ending injury, or certainly career impacting injury, and I don't really know what you do about that except get CCTV on the idiot, find the idiot, and ban the idiot for life. But it's just such a grim thing that, you know, someone is so thoughtlessly throwing a metal object at the head of a player. And like I said, how would that person feel if you told them right before they're about to do it, you're going to blind this person in one eye, you know, which is always a distinct possibility.
The weird thing is, when the first couple happened a wee bit earlier in the season, when I was talking about it in various places, I wasn't exactly talking it down, but I was thinking, right, let's just make sure this is isolated, and let's not allow copycats to get involved here. Gone. It's everywhere now. Mm. It's happening far too many games now. The copycat's happening. And it's whether they're saying, oh, he threw a coin, I'm going to throw one. It's not like that. It's they threw coins, we didn't hear much about it, so somebody else will throw a bottle or throw whatever, you know, maybe a plastic bottle, it doesn't matter. And now it's actually, oh, that's what I'm going to do. And it's difficult because you wanted to come down hard on it originally, but if you made such a big thing, you might have encouraged copycats. Well, it doesn't matter now because it's out there and it's happening far too regularly. And I'm seeing it in Scotland, seeing it in England, and obviously it's been a bigger thing. You know, I watched a lot of it in Italian football for quite a long time, and it was almost kind of shrugged off and accepted for a long time. But there is only one answer now, and I'm afraid it's quite draconian, and it's get a CCTV cameras, and when they get done, and when they get caught, and when they get banned, we make a big deal of it now, and we show people this is what happens. You don't ever get to see your club again, and that's it. Because yeah, it's that strong, and I know it sounds a wee bit extreme for me to say that, but there's an agreement here in place. You don't throw things at people who can't. You know, if a player goes and throws something at you, you would sue them. And by the way, you'd win. Mm. Nobody should be allowed to do that, and they can't protect themselves in any way because there's a mass of people and they can't see anything coming. It has to be stopped, and the only way now is we flag it up all the time, and also we flag the fact that the people who have done it will never get to see their team again.
Mm. So Lukaku, 7 touches, 2 in the first half, I thought, including tip-off. Now that's quite something.
Yes, we have had this conversation before, but I say I don't think he can do it 2 games in a row, right? And I've watched him. I explained to him a few weeks ago. Remember going to see him for Belgium in the World Cup in Russia, and he was unplayable in one game. I mean, he was absolutely staggeringly, brilliantly unplayable. And the next game, I could have played against him. There are not 2 games in there. And I actually watched him play in the World Club final, and he was really good. The energy, he chased things down. He really got in people's faces. He held the ball up. He was really strong. But he was actually starting the high press, right? Then what happens? Next game. And again, it sounds a bit old school. It's got to be in there. You've got to build it in there over the years. There's no point in thinking, all right, I'm going to work really, really hard, you know, and I'm going to get myself really fit. That takes an eternity to get that sort of feeling in your body where I've worked not just a pre-season, it's pre-season after pre-season after pre-season. It's working hard in training. It's everything so that it's in your gut, that you don't. It doesn't hurt anymore to do that. You just do it. And I just never felt that Romelu has often in his career got himself to a situation where he's been able to do that for periods of time. And I'll be honest with you, I was very impressed with him in the World Club Cup. The semi, he worked hard, and it was warm out there as well. Final, he really put himself about. It was very, maybe his best performance in a Chelsea shirt. And then what happens? He's gone. Yeah. It's just blow up. And it's travel, tiredness, 2 games before that. So the only answer is, for him, is you drop him there. So he has a great game, then you drop him. That's probably the answer. And then you play somebody else up there, which will miff him massively. But I can't actually see any other answer to it, other than he goes in the most unbelievable training regime where he works unbelievably hard and takes time out from the game. But I'm just not sure it's there. And there's a number of people I've over the years have watched like that just think, you've actually not got a game in. Some of them have not got a game in them. I've known some players recent players, and I mean recently, you think you've only got 60 minutes in you. You actually haven't got a whole game in you at that pace. And it's, I think it's very clear, that's not disinterest. That's not blame all the other players because you won't get the ball into them. It's got to be better than that. And energy levels to get about the place for 90 minutes. I'm not sure if they are two or three games in a row. I'm pretty sure it isn't.
Very interesting. Because Tuchel's clearly frustrated. It was borne out in answers to various questions afterwards. There was one where he made a point of referencing how there was no obvious explanation for the lack of touches, because he said, we haven't changed the system. It was just a throw-in line there. We haven't changed the system. And only, you know, said various other things. And I was thinking, well, this was, you remember, this was Lukaku's complaint in the Italian media that the system had been changed. And it was just a slight, you know, he didn't say it with great malevolence, Tuchel, but it's obviously in his brain somewhere that, you know, don't try and put this back on me. This was on him. It was very much Tuchel's response post-match. He was not saying the team need to find him more, the team need to do more. It was pretty much all heaped on Lukaku. This all points towards Lukaku's on the market in the summer, I think.
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not in the slightest bit surprised. Whether the club would be disappointed with that, because I mean the club wanted him there. You know, they felt he was the answer to it. But he's just never looked for long enough like a Tuchel player. But having said that, or let's go for Lukaku's point of view. He can turn around and go, well, how many goals does the other centre forward score? You know, Havertz. I mean, he scores quite important ones, like the ones when the wins the World Club Championship trophy and the one that wins the Champions League trophy. Grant him that, he scores big goals, but numbers, Werner, numbers. You know, and Lukaku can turn around and go, yeah, are my numbers any worse than their numbers? And they're not really. So. He has got an argument that Chelsea aren't suited to that. There is another thing. Here's a wee analogy. I'm making excuses. Hands up here, by the way. Hammer me for you as much as you like. I'm trying to give it, not an excuse, a reason. Because we're trying to find reasons why a guy who scores millions of goals doesn't score loads of goals anymore when he gets with Belgium. He's not getting a lot of balls put into the places he wants them, right? At the times he wants them. They've not had Reece James there for ages. Ben Chilwell's gone as well. So there's not much coming for the right. A wee bit from Ziyech. And from the left, Alonso plays now and again and scored and made the goal during the week there. And I was saying to somebody, could you imagine if you took Trent Alexander-Arnold out of their side, sort of Liverpool side, and you took Robertson out from the other side, from Liverpool. And so you're not playing for 8-10 weeks, right? They've created 25 between them assists. Do you think Romelu would kind of like those two other guys back in again, hammering the balls in there into grey areas? And I think there's a good argument there that just when Lukaku needed them to on the pitch, swinging those balls in between, you know, the goalkeeper and the centre backs, he got himself fit, and they got themselves injured. And there was some crossover, but there wasn't much crossover. So I can see a wee possible way out of it, but I'm just not sure. I wouldn't bet against him leaving in the summer. Anyway, did I say Adams? I meant Arnold. Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah. No, we knew what you meant. Before we go, just to mention, so Roy Hodgson, I'm sure working on shape, 15 hours a day with the Watford team, beginning to get something out of the Dem. And Burnley had this 3-0 win away to Brighton. So Chris Wood obviously departed, and we all thought, well, Brighton are in big trouble. And then we heard about this 6'6" bloke being signed, Veghorst. I don't know if you saw much of him or just the highlights, but geez, he got touch, he's got awareness, I think he's got a vision for the game. And do you know, even something small, great body language as well, like very encouraging, very involved with teammates. You can see him being a really good focal point for Burnley all of a sudden. That changes their prospects a touch.
Do you know the bit that really gets me? Where have you been, mate? You know, I'm looking at him going, it's not as if we should have missed you. You know, like, you've got all these things. Yeah. You're thinking, well, wait a minute. How come you've just landed now? You know, it's every now and again a player comes at you and you just think, And that's kind of obvious. He looks perfect for them.
Doesn't he?
I agree completely. You're waiting for the weakness to show up. And who knows what the weakness is going to be. And then there's got to be one somewhere, right? There's got to be one somewhere, right? But looking at it, you're thinking, he is the dream for Dyche, isn't he? He is the Sean Dyche. I was going to add the word that I want. He is his dream. So it's fantastic that he's there. And it's given them this massive lift and an opportunity to get out of it. None of us have written them off. None of us. I don't think anyone's really fully written Burnley off now because they've got out of it so often. They keep on battling. They don't often get absolutely trounced, you know. So they can put a little bit of a run together. But if you stick that on top of it and the lift that gets to everyone else's, I have to say, if I was a Burnley fan, I'd be getting a wee bit excited. Mm. I think it would class.
And like, I appreciate the guy has played 12 times for the Netherlands, so he hasn't come from total obscurity here, but it just seems like a really shrewd signing. I just had a glance at his numbers to see. So Wolfsburg, over the previous 4 years, scored 59 in 118. And then Alkmaar, the 2 years before that, which goes from 16 to 18, he scored 31 in 60. So if we want to boil down the maths there, since 2016, this guy scores a goal every two games, as well as all the other play. So, you know, like, this is a great signing.
Why?
I know.
Hiding in plain sight kind of thing. As if he's a little guy, you could miss it. Yeah, like that.
The scout didn't notice him.
I have to say, I'm slightly surprised because there's other teams that you might have, you know, pushed to get him before as well. You look at teams like Celtic up in Scotland, they're very good at getting that sort of thing. You know, sort of player, spotting them at a decent time, getting them over, then developing and moving on. So I'm just really quite surprised that the finished article seems to walk into a team, and not only that, but just when they need them as well. Yeah. So no, and it's the funny thing, we're talking about two centre forwards in a row there, Lukaku and him, and I'm not going to say it, but you're all thinking of just how, like, who would you rather have? by the way, I'm coughing a bit. I went for a run today and I ran too fast.
Oh, that's good. I didn't want to ask about the dreaded sea, so there you go.
No, I went for I was traveling for 6 days there, and I checked this morning and I'm absolutely fine. But I went for a run and just I felt too good, and then with 10 minutes to go I thought, I think I pushed this too far, so I will recover with a curry. But anyway, look, we'll find out the weaknesses, but see what you said about all the things about Weghorst. Body language. Absolutely love it. You look like Brozier when you look at him down at Southampton. You look at him. See, when you see that, you just love it. And that's what you want more than anything else. And every football fan and a hell of a lot of managers want it as well. Mm. And I kind of hope they get out of it. I know a lot of people don't, but I hope they do. Yeah. You need different styles in the Premier League, and theirs is different from everyone else.
Well, it certainly is. So suddenly we've got really interesting relegation situation, really interesting race for top four, and maybe even a title race. So it's not all bad. Pat Nevin, thanks a million.
Pleasure.
Cheers. Pat Nevin with us there, as ever, on a Monday evening. Our football show coverage is brought to you by Sky. You can watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season. We're going to talk some Liverpool next.
Yeah, like you said, goal line clearance is a lot of good play. Feisty at times, think Arsenal's throw count is higher than Chelsea.
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
I could never see myself putting on another jersey.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
And you're very welcome back. So our football coverage here on Off The Ball is brought to you by Sky. You can watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season. We're going to turn to Liverpool, talk about them in a bit more depth. Very happy to say Harriet Pryor from the Anfield Wrap is with us. Hi, Harriet.
Hi, you okay?
Yeah, very well. We thought we would talk some more Liverpool because suddenly we have a title race and we didn't think we would have one, really. This has all kind of crept up on us a touch over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it really has. I think a lot of our contributors on podcasts are saying that it's all over, and I think that was a bit too soon to make that call, obviously, and nothing's really decided before Christmas and New Year, is it? And now all of a sudden, one weekend and a few results going our way, including obviously sorting our own position out and coming from 1-0 down against Norwich, which should have been an easy game, and it didn't quite follow that script in the end, but we got there. And Man City obviously dropping points, which no one thought they'd do, and now suddenly we have a title race again, and we've got a game in hand, 6 points is the gap now, and it's all very exciting.
Yeah, Leeds on Wednesday, so it could suddenly be 3 and then everything to play for at the Etihad. So a short version of the game on Saturday was first half not so good, and then second half really got going.
I'd say first half probably just a bit slow, and it's quite hard to play against teams, especially teams that are fighting for their place in the league and to avoid relegation. They often come to Anfield especially and just look not to concede and to scrape through the point and defend, put all the players behind the ball. I think we probably saw that with Norwich a bit. They actually had more chances than I think many of us expected them to get. They played quite well in moments, and our change in formation, we changed a lot from the game in the midweek in the Champions League, and it just didn't quite click, to be honest, in the first half and probably actually the first 60, and then the substitutions happened and it changed the game, and particularly Thiago coming on and bringing a different energy and Origi up front gave them something new to think about, and they couldn't deal with it, and then the goals started rolling in and kept coming, and it was 3-1 in the end and quite an easy game for the last 30 minutes, but it wasn't easy until then.
One of the general worries made about Liverpool in advance of the season is that the squad was not deep enough to compete with City across the league season, and numerous people suggested Liverpool might do well in the Champions League but just falter in the league. And yet suddenly it feels like, well, the signing of Diaz certainly helps. Even Klopp has said in the last couple of weeks, this is the strongest the squad has ever been in my time here. Where are you on the squad depth situation, and did you have those worries, say, last summer in advance of this season?
Yeah, I think particularly at the start of the season when we'd got through summer and we hadn't really added many players to the squad, there was a little bit of trepidation around the squad age in particular and whether we'd have players that would come in for the future, players that could come in off the bench and make an impact. And I think particularly in games at the start of the season, you did really see that and see that it was having a negative impact because we didn't have anyone around the 60 mark to bring on and make a difference. And now all of a sudden you're looking at team sheets and you're literally having players like Gomez and Curtis Jones in the past few weeks, to name a few, who are being not even making the squad because our depth is so strong at the moment. I think it's obviously a combination of bringing in Diaz, which has added a real buzz and a real sense of momentum to the fan base, but obviously on top of that also keeping players fit, which was definitely not the case last season and at times at the start of this season. And we've had a few players back earlier than expected, like Harvey Elliott. Thiago's back now, and all of a sudden we've got options, which is great news for Klopp. I think he's still a bit reluctant to boast about the squad depth, but it's definitely something we're seeing at the moment.
Diaz is pitched up without a word of English and seemed to settle instantly.
he really has, and Klopp says that he just knows how he just smiles all the time on the training pitch. He's just constantly smiling, whether he's doing the most mundane warm-up drills or anything like that. I think, you know, there's obviously a lot of Spanish-speaking players in the team, and also our assistant manager Pep Linders it speaks both, you know, Spanish and Portuguese, and he's obviously had a great influence, so I think that's helped him to gel really quickly. But also he just seems like a really positive guy, and that's what you need sometimes. And I don't think you can be underestimated how much of an impact that makes for playing on the pitch when they've settled in really well with the team and they get on well with people, and that's clearly playing dividends because he's been absolutely excellent so far. I can't believe he's only played a few games in a Liverpool shirt because he looks like he's been there years.
Harry, what have you seen from Jordan Henderson? Because we had Kenny Cunningham in here as a pundit in studio and we were just chatting last week, and even just beyond getting over this most recent injury, he's looked at Henderson this season and is just detecting a slight slowing. You know, those lung-bursting runs he makes and those smaller moments which almost indicate where a player is. Henderson's still only 31, so you don't want to quite get into the territory of, geez, I wonder is time catching up with him. But there has been a slight shift from the player that we saw win Footballer of the Year, certainly.
I think that there are probably moments and games where he's not at the top of his game. I don't think Jordan Henderson probably wants to be playing week in, week out at the moment. And sadly, he's kind of been in a position where he's had to be playing every single game because there hasn't been as many options. I think now we'll start to see him maybe have a few more rests in games where he's not necessarily needed as much. Funnily enough, I thought he was actually really impressive at the weekend. He played in that more holding role, which we usually see Fabinho in. And that kind of seemed to suit him a bit more. He looked a little bit more settled. He obviously had that great assist for Diaz. And I think a lot of the criticism, to be honest, is unfounded. Maybe there is a little bit of a slowing down, but I think that's a natural progression with every single player. But most of the games we still see him and he still makes such an impact. And I think we're allowed, you know, we have to allow players to have off days. And when everyone around them in the midfield is ticking and performing so well, that becomes even more prominent, doesn't it? But he looked back to his best for me at the weekend, and I think that would just have to be a bit patient with him, allow him a bit of rest, not expect him to be at the top of his game every single game, and hopefully we can still get the best out of him for a couple more seasons.
Would you say, because you're very much in touch obviously with the fan base, is the consensus that Liverpool should break the bank and give Mo Salah what he wants pretty much within reason, and it's a terrible thing to say that within reason could be 350 somewhere in that region sterling per week. But is the consensus that this needs to be done, this should be done, or is there a hesitation amongst the fan base, do you think, about doing that?
Honestly, not from anyone I've spoken to, there's absolutely no hesitation whatsoever. All of us are pretty much in agreement, from the people I've spoken to at least, that he is a player that you should break the mold for. And with our ownership, they have a very strict way of doing things and a very set structure around how they operate with transfers and wage structures and all of those kind of things around the financial aspects of the club. For someone like Mo Salah, you kind of need to bend the rules, because he is world class, arguably the best player in the world at the moment, certainly the best of what he's doing. I want to see him stick around. I don't think he's getting, you know, he's still at the top of his game, still performing so well, and manages to get us out of situations every single game. We saw that at the weekend as well with his moment of brilliance. So yeah, definitely want him to stick around. And if that means, you know, paying 350k a week, if that's the going rate for him, if that's what he's going to get elsewhere, it's absolutely mad to be even talking about that kind of money. But there needs to be an understanding that that's what he's worth now, and they need to do what they can to keep him.
Well, the alternative is that the money goes into John Henry's pocket or FSG's pocket. I mean, you know, that's the reality here, these wage structures. And on the owners, the last time John Henry, I think, really grabbed our collective attention was when he was having that apologetic, you know, hostage-esque video on the back of the European Super League. Where is the popularity there of the owners amongst the fan base at the moment? Like, are they at such a status where they can say, well, we've brought in Klopp and we've delivered trophies and we've delivered titles and we've got this club really back on track, therefore if we say Salah on that money is not for us, will they come under a lot of heat and a lot of pressure? Are they in kind of thin ice post European Super League, or is there maybe a wider respect for the quality of the job FSG has done in reality?
I think there's obviously a respect for what they've done, but I certainly don't think they're above criticism. And actually, for certain things they've done, like the Super League, like you mentioned, they have got a lot of criticism, and they've accepted that they've made bad calls and bad decisions. And, you know, there's been issues with ticket prices a couple of seasons ago when there was a walkout. There's been various things that people have expressed unhappiness with the ownership. And I certainly think if they were to let Mo Salah go, that there would be a lot of fans that were particularly unhappy about that. And I don't think that would be unreasonable. I think the thing is now is that Salah's come out multiple times in multiple interviews and said he wants to stay. It's in the club hands, and now they need to find a way to sort that out, because he's made his intentions clear.
And if the Glazer family turn up at Old Trafford and wave to the crowd, it's fairly obvious what reaction they would get. What reaction would John Henry get?
I actually have no idea. I think it's quite a split opinion. I think from a footballing sense, we all appreciate that a lot has gone our way in the last few years, and that is, you know, down to Klopp being brought in and various players being brought in who have managed to turn everything around. There's also a lot of discontent with a lot of decisions they've made, like I said. So I don't know, to be honest. There's a lot of mixed messages on the ownership, and people can make their own opinions and what's right for them, but they're definitely not above criticism, and no ownership should be, in my opinion.
Michael Edwards departed recently as sporting director. He's been there since 2011. Liverpool's transfer business for the guts of the last decade has been exceptional. I think we can all agree. To what extent were Edwards' fingerprints all over that? I know Julian Ward has stepped into that role now. He was the deputy sporting director. Was Edwards responsible for identifying talent, bringing talent to Klopp, or was it more of a negotiating once talent has been identified? What vacuum does he leave now?
So Edwards is still there to the end of the season, I believe. And then, like you mentioned, Ward then goes and takes over. So I think Edwards would have had a big role in the Diaz transfer and various other things. Obviously, moving forward, Ward has been working alongside him for a long time. So hopefully it will be a smooth transition. I think with the transfers, there's a bit of an understanding that the transfers come from sort of different places. There's an unbelievable scout team at Liverpool, and they managed to identify players very early on and see if they're a Liverpool star player. I think you saw that with Jota, arguably most recent one, where he's just completely fitted the system as soon as he came in. So Edwards is very, very clever at the financial side of things, at helping to identify players and bring them in. And sometimes there's a Klopp signing. I think Diaz is one in particular where Klopp has identified him, said he wants him, and Edwards does all he can to get him in. But the transfers definitely come from different places, and Edwards has been very clever getting business done and being the linchpin to all of that. So it'll definitely be a big loss, but we're confident that Ward can step up and fill that role.
Okay, so apologies. I must have seen the headline that he was leaving. So he's leaving at the end of the season, so he's still there for a time. So it's not that Edwards is this genius who spots everyone and gets it done that way. Like, that's interesting about Diaz that Klopp saw him, but Edwards certainly has an ability to get a deal done, which, you know,
Manchester, definitely. And I think a lot of people have said he is a bit of a genius especially for the clever financial deals he's managed to get, and right. and the way he's managed to sort of deal with things from a financial perspective and identify certain players and get things over the line. But there's such a big team that goes into these transfers now, right from the initial levels where they're literally tracking people, that they'll be tracking so many players all the time that we never even hear about and know about. And that's what, you know, from there to getting a transfer over the line, it's a really long process, but he is definitely one of the key figures in those.
Right. Why is he leaving?
I actually don't know. Yeah. Couldn't tell you.
I would have thought things are going pretty well at Liverpool just of late, you know?
Yeah, maybe he fancies a change. He's been there a while, so 10 years, he might.
Okay. Yeah. He's not going to like pitch up at Newcastle or something. Are these the rumours or what are we hearing?
I'm not entirely sure. I'm not sure if he's agreed to go somewhere else. I haven't, to be honest. I've only been focusing on the Liverpool perspective and Ward coming back in, and I'm satisfied with that. So I'm not sure what he's off to do next.
Edwards leaves. He's dead to me. I'm no longer taking any interest in how his career goes.
Brutal.
So Leeds Wednesday, and that potentially brings Liverpool back to within three. Carabao Cup on Sunday, and that would be a real fill-up for everybody. And then there's Champions League in their title race. So suddenly this season kind of, it feels like it's caught fire a touch over the weekend. These are exciting times now, suddenly.
Yeah, definitely. And it's exciting to be involved in all four competitions and for them more or less to be in our hands now. Obviously, the league slightly less so, with us still having a little bit of a deficit, but we still got to go to the Etihad, like you said earlier on. So it's really exciting. I think the cup final is going to be a great game, and I can't wait, you know, to see how that plays out. We haven't been involved in those cup competitions to that late stage in quite a while. So getting to the final of that, hopefully going on a bit more of a run in the FA Cup. We've had the good Champions League game against Inter, so we've got the second leg of that to look forward to. It's a really exciting time to be following this team and see where it takes us, and hopefully a few trophies at the end of the season. That would be nice.
Just on our Jordan Henderson chat, there was a YouTube comment in asking Harriet, what is Liverpool's best midfield three? So go on then, Champions League final, who's the midfield three?
Oh, you know what? I'd always have Fabinho in there in that holding position. I think he fulfills that role like no one else. Thiago and Henderson alongside him, I think that would be the three that started if we had a Champions League final tomorrow, regardless of what's being said about Henderson's form. I think that would be the three we'd see.
Okay, very good. Harriet Pryor from the Anfield Wrap. Thanks, Emil. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Bye.